Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Thursday morning, and I want to say a little bit about Purim, being sponsored by our good friends at Gluck Plumbing. I promised them two, and I can't use refried beans. So let me pose the following. I'm actually working on a Dvar Torah, a longer one for Purim itself, that I usually do in my house on Purim. But in that context, I was giving thought to who is this person, Mordechai? Because the story, of course, is that Mordechai ticked off Haman, and Vayivis be'enav lishloch yabba Mordechai levado, and then he decided to kill the Jewish people, and he came close to it, which means Mordechai took a big risk, and the others were angry at him. Atom ha'pilena becher shel Haman. That's what the Medrash says, they said. And it's not clear if they ever reconciled with him. When it says, you know, Pirshu mimena mixes Sanhedrin, Ratzi l'rovecha, as you know, Rashi, Mahalach is, I mean, I guess the Gemara is mashman that that's because of Bittul Torah. In other words, you know, yeshivish thing. Yes, you saved the Jewish people. Yes, you brought about a miracle of Purim. Yes, you did Kima v'Kibbalo, but you missed Night Seder. it's very like a mashkiach. But still, Mordechai, I mean, it's very hard to get details since there's so little in the Megillah and there's so much in the rabbinic literature, especially in Midrashim and the Farshim and all the rest of it, as we know. Everybody goes to town on Megillah's Esther. But keep several thoughts in mind. Mordechai, we always imagined, is like a rabbi. That's why they're angry that he gave up learning, you know, to become the prime minister of Persia and all the rest of it. First of all, a rabbi doesn't become a prime minister of an empire. You get what I'm saying? That's not the skill set. Just because you're smart in one area doesn't mean you have experience in the other. If the king makes him, you know, mamish the prime minister, he had to be something like a Daniel type, especially if you follow the Jewish tradition. And Mordechai and Esther were in there for quite a while because their son, the son of Achashverosh. By the way, it's Machlokis in the Achronim, I think. Tosfos of Rush, actually, who says that the baby that was born was actually Mordechai's baby. That's based on the idea. No, the king didn't know it. That's based on the idea that that they were married and, you know, how you Yoshe Becheko shall A. And then afterwards, Tovelis v'Yosha b'Cheiko shall be. So, you know, and was using birth control. And there's always a machlugis, you know, with who was she using birth control? With A or with B? Meshameshes b'moch. It's part of that famous sugya. But whatever the case is, that's in the Gemara, by the way. Right? That's in the Gemara. Now, not everybody holds that they were married, but I'm just going with the idea that they're married. So, if that's the case, I mean, they were holding power in Persia for quite a while. Think about that for a second, my friends. You have the Persian Empire, which was 127 provinces, and you have the Iranian aristocracy, and here you got a from Jew in charge. I mean, it's not so posh at the Bacabal that. If it's true, they had to dance on eggs. You understand? It's not typical, you know, like another Iron Cutler can do something like that. And Moshe Feinstein, their specialty was being Gedolei Torah. That's not the same thing as being Gedolei politics. So Mordechai was just not your average rabbi. Now, this was an era when you had such people. Daniel, for example, as you know, had been prime minister for a while. Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, we're told in the Bible, had high positions in the government. I mean, just think about that. The person, may learn every day, but he's the Secretary of State, he's the Secretary of Treasury. I mean, it's a full-time business. and how you hunt them with all different guys, it's not pashut. Moreover, Mordechai, again, if you go by the stories, how did Haman become an eved of Mordechai, as the famous story goes? That Mordechai showed him his shtar avdus and all that, and that's what ticked off Haman, according to Medrash, right? Or Buti and Buli, as the Gemara says. The story is that, if I remember correctly, that Mordechai and Haman were commanding armies in some war, and the Haman and his team, you know, ran out of food. And because they were starving, he sold himself as an eved to Mordechai to get food. That's basically how the story goes. And, you know, they say Haman, the Gemara in Megillah says Haman was a barber for a long time. So you have two very talented individuals over here. Mordechai rose from a rabbinical background, and Haman rose from a barber background. So even though they didn't start in high politics, they got there. So you're talking about two individuals of very remarkable qualities. Somebody that you would hire today, your CEO of a big operation. So how do you have a gadol b'Torah who's a commander of a Persian army? You get what I'm saying? Like, it's one thing is clear. Mordechai wasn't the way you imagine. You understand? Moreover, if you go by the different mafarshim, when you come to how they read Ish Yehudi Hayi B'Shushan Abira, I'm thinking of Abishus, but there are many others. There's Shushan and there's Shushan Abira, right? They're not the same. There was a city called Shushan, and in the middle of the city was a royal compound, actually surrounded by a moat of water. That's why it says that Arkuma Damaya, you know, that Mordechai at the end has to cross the river to meet with his brothers, with fellow Jews, and get them to all daven and fast and so forth. You know the story. So, you know, they say like this, Ish Yehudi Hayi Shushan Abira, Ish Yechidi Hayi Shushan Abira. Mordechai was the only Jew, okay? If you go by the Yaris Dvash, he was a Jew, and, you know, he wore his yarmulke outside. He wore his tzitzis out. He wore his talis and tefillin all the time. All right, but I'm just saying, it wasn't a regular person that you imagine, you know, Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva today or something like that. A person of exceptional talent and living by himself without the other Jews, which is strange. So that means Mordechai and Esther were living a Jewish life by themselves across the river away from the other Jews. I don't say they never interacted, but their regular intercourse, social intercourse, was with Goyim in the royal compound. I mean, hello, Doverhu. I can't think of anybody offhand who would fit this description that, you know, lived by himself away from the others and was a big Talmud Chacham, a big Talmud Chacham, and was a frum Jew at the same time. I mean, where did he daven? Well, maybe there's no davening at that time. I mean, you know, the Anshei Knesset Gedolah invented the davening, and Mordechai was part of that. So let's say this before the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. So, I mean, before, you know, that happened. So there was no shul, and there was no synagogue thing, no davening. Fine. But it's unusual, let's put it that way. And, you know, Mordechai wasn't just the average Magad Shir, as we would say today. Now, which, by the way, is why Esther was taken, you know, for the king's harem. Because, although it is strange, because if they're living in the royal compound, nobody knew that he's Jewish. Nobody knew that she was his relative, especially if you say it's his wife. You know, I plan to speak about it on Sunday, but, you know, that whole thing is, like, weird, because how could they not know? Many asked that question, right? And if they knew she's married, they wouldn't take her for the beauty contest. Not really. You know, there's a whole, was it a rivet or something who says, it's hevel, this is his words, it's hevel to say they were married because the king didn't take bu'ulos. That's what the rivet said, you understand? So, you have a funny situation over here. That's all I can say. Now, in this context, Haman rises to power, as we know. And by the way, it's even more strange that Esther says that the person who saved your life with Bigson and Seresh was Mordechai. I mean, like, if she's hiding her identity, so why would she say it's Mordechai? Like, what are you doing with Mordechai? Well, he raised me or something like that. Why would Mordechai raise a guy? Do you see what I'm saying? It's strange, the credulity. That's why I say there's a lot in the story that's not clear when you pursue it. Usually when you see these Mepharshim in the Megillah, at least in my experience, they deal with individual units. But they don't seem to go through the whole book with a single Mahalach. So like I say, if they already knew what it is, you know, then why would, you know, if they knew that she's connected with Mordechai, why would they not know, Ain Esther Magedis says, I'm a Melis Moladato. Really? So Mordechai raised a gypsy? I mean, you know, what's going on over here? That's assuming they didn't know that they're married. Assuming that they were married. You see what I mean? Anyhow, so the height of the story, of course, is that Mordechai provokes Haman to killing the Jews. Which everybody got angry at. As they say, the Klal Yisrael say, it's even in the Gemara, you know, that Ma'asali, Binyam Dakne, Mordechai Dakne Lahaman, and he was Makne, that is to say, he made Haman jealous or angry at the Jews. So here you have a guy named Mordechai. We don't know how Haman, you know, obtained his freedom, if he was Mordechai's Eved. So, you know, how did it happen that he obtained his freedom? There's got to be a story there. And Haman, therefore, must have resented Mordechai, I guess, you know, from day one. And Mordechai knows it. Now Haman somehow or other has risen to power. Some suggest, by the way, that, you know, this is how some say it. Haman's Mamuchan. And if Mamuchan convinced the king to kill Vashti, and in Vashti's place he got Esther, and now he's in love with Esther, the king. Plus, Esther saved his life with the big son Seresh. So, ironically, the king says, who's the guy that gave me this whole idea? Haman, I'll make him prime minister. You know what I mean? It's like strange. Because of a Jewish favor, the Amalekite rose to power. You know, all right. Anyhow, the interesting thing is that, I mean, many interesting things, that Mordechai refuses to bow down to Haman. The Jewish people get angry at him, but he doesn't care, right? And indeed, Haman tries to kill everybody. What does Mordechai do? The Gemara has its interpretations. But it could be Vayizak Zal Kogdol Amar. Mordechai said, oh, what did I do? Now I got everybody killed. You understand? Now I got everybody killed. It's going to be my fault. He didn't know it'd be an ace. And, you know, Esther says, go and Lech Knosis call Yehudim. I mean, you're going to have to, let me put it this way. Mordechai has to cross the river and go to the Jewish community and say, we got to go and daven. Because we got a massacre coming up, and they'll say, what exactly is the reason that this guy decided to kill the Jews? Because he hadn't done it until now. And Mordechai says, well, I wouldn't bow down to him, and all the rest of it. And they say, why didn't you bow down to him? You know? And Mordechai says, this reason, they say that reason. There's a very interesting Chasam Sofer that I saw in a Sefer. And that is as follows. Remember I told you, and you know already, that you can read the Megillah in a two-tiered fashion. HaMelech can be Melech downstairs, and HaMelech can be Melech upstairs. And it says, Madu'a to'overis mitzvahs HaMelech. The Jews asked him, why you violated mitzvahs HaMelech? Now, in the Megillah, it says, the Avdei HaMelech said this. Which are not the Jews. So in other words, the Goyim in Shushan said, how come you're not bowing down to Haman? But there's no question, at least when the word came out that Haman's issuing this decree to kill the Jews. And it says, by the way, Hir Shushan Navocha, they were perplexed, they were confused. I mean, they had known what the reason for this. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, without any kind of, you know, previous campaign of defamation, demonization, it comes out of decree that they're going to kill the Jews. Why? So Ir Shushan Navocha. See, I would learn that the Jews in the Ir Shushan were confused. I know there's other ways, there's a million ways of explaining every pasuk in the Megillah, but it seems to me, in this context, that's what they mean. Now, so Mordechai's in the inner compound. The Jews on the outside don't know what's going on. And all of a sudden, they get a decree that they're all going to get killed in a few months. Right? And then he goes to Esther and all this sort of thing, like a damage control. And Esther says, Lech Kenosis call Yehudin, which means you got to go to talk to everybody and tell them what happened. And you got to go explain to them. And when they do, the Jews say, Matuah Mapilan Becherim Shal Haman. Why'd you do this? And Mordechai answers, at least according to the Medrash, is an Avodah Zarah, right? Either Haman himself was a Nevad, it's not clear how that works, but that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin 61. But Haman was a Nevad, or he wore an idol on his breast, right? The idea that Haman was a Nevad is always a problem to me, because, you know, really? Haman's a god, a deity? You know what I mean? A deity? Mind you, Achashverosh said everybody should bow down to him. Achashverosh was not a god. He was actually a Zoroastrian. So, you know, they have their gods. The king is not a god. In Egypt, the king is a god. Not in Persia. So he would say to his prime minister, you can tell everybody you're a god. Everybody should bow down to you. I mean, does that sound normal? That's number one. Number two, if it's a Zohar on his breast, so how do you defend that? So Chassam Sofer says like this, Madua Tov Mitzvah Zemel, Tochachtam Haisa, Shahaman Ola Legedula Begzeris HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Malko Shalolam, Tzivu HaMelech Sheishtachavu Lo, Hayachelik Magzera, Velo Hivina Madua Eina Mishtachavu Lo. The meaning that the Jewish people were angry at Mordechai because they said like this, according to this, I'm quoting the Chassam Sofer here, or at least I'm quoting the quote from Chassam Sofer. Haman rose to power in an unusual way. Achar Adwar Mele Gidil Melcha Chashvesh as Haman, especially if he had been a barber and a slave. That doesn't happen much. It can happen once in a while. Things like that happen in the Ottoman Empire, rarely. It could happen, but it's not push it, you know. Take somebody who's not from the aristocracy and so forth. Haman must have been a very capable guy. Now, it says, Madu ata over Mrs. Hamelach. So you and I, this is a very good word, by the way. You and I translate it, why did you, Mordechai, violate the command of the king to bow down to Haman? Meaning, Achashverosh told everybody to bow down to Haman, right? At least that's the way we regularly read it. But you can also read it, Hamelech, it's the king upstairs, right? It's the king upstairs. And they said to him, so Haman Oleg Dul Gzeres HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This rise to power of Haman is obviously Min HaShemayim. Malko Shel Olam. It's a Gzera of the Melech of the Gol Velt, in other words, Hashem. Tziva HaMelech Sheishtach Helem Gzera. If Haman rose to this power, Hashem wants it to happen. And therefore, the command to bow down is part of that gzera. So this transcends Yehar Gval Yavar regular rules. And they couldn't understand why Mordechai is not bowing down to him, since you see what the Gemara calls Shah Mesachek is shiny. That when the moment is smiling on you, in other words, when you're in a roll of luck, you can't go against it because you'll get crushed. You see? So you made a terrible mistake by, you know, not bowing down to Haman, especially the way they describe Mordechai did it all in Mepharshim, that he was very ostentatious about it, the rest of it. He could have, avoided seeing Haman a lot, but he didn't do that. There are even versions of the Medrash and the stories that he really put himself on purpose there, and he showed off Haman's, shtar of being an Eved. Mordechai insulted him, okay? Now, why are you insulting somebody who could get everybody killed? I know in the end they didn't all get killed, but meanwhile, they had 3 days of Shrek. And there are a lot of, in the beginning of the Mar Megillah, and the Agarata, this guy, Pasach le Parsha Sabah, Psich de Ochi, Pasach le Parsha Sabah, and they say, in the Medrash, I remember, Chayecha Tluyum Chaminegar, Pachata Talayla, Vyam Below Sami Bachayecha, like in the Tokacha. It was a terrible experience that they went through. Why? Because you didn't want to bow down to Haman? Don't you see that the Melech wanted you to bow down to Haman, meaning Hashem? That was their argument. Now, who are they? These are the other rabbis. If you went to Shushan, went to the Jewish community of Shushan, I mean, these include everybody in the community of Shushan. The Rabbanim as well as the regular people. They didn't see the situation as Mordechai did. So you have over here an early example in history of what we call Yehard Val Yavar questions. Is it Yehard Val Yavar or Yavar Val Yehard? Now, I know that the style in Purim, I've done it myself, is you go with the regular Gemara and Sanhedrin and Ayin Dalet, and you go with the rules of Yehard Val Yavar, the big three versus the others, there's Befer Hesia, there's Shatzai Shaman, Karga Olang, and all that stuff, and you try to fit the Purim story into it. But consider, especially if you follow the Gemara in Ayin Dalet and Sanhedrin, where did they decide, Nimnu Vagamru, that's the language over there, remember, Balias based Nitzah or something like that. In other words, Sanhedrin at the time of the Romans, in the Talmudic era, got together and decided on the big three. That, you know, if they Goyim tell you, threaten your life, you can do any Aver except the big three. And later when it's modified with Parhesia and Shas HaShman. But we're talking about a long time before that. Many centuries before that. Who says this was hardwired? In Jewish history, as far as we can tell anyway, going by the biblical accounts, when did you ever have an onus on Avodah Zarah? During the entire period of the Shoftim and the Malachim. There's plenty of Avodah Zarah the Jews did, but they did it on their own. Where do you find that somebody, especially a guy, forced them to worship idols? You don't. So the whole Shiloh was just never Nogea. Only when you get to Nebuchadnezzar and then Megillas Esther, as far as I can tell, that's when you run into onus. That's when you run into the kind of thing we're talking about. This is a new question. The psak on this had not been out. As you know, anybody's familiar with that Gemara in Sanhedrin, which I think a lot of people are, there's even a debate in the Talmudic era, in the Tannaitic era, whether Avodah Zarah is Yehard Val Yavar or Yavar Val Yehard. You understand? Whether Avodah Zarah itself is something that a guy puts a gun to your head, you can bow down to the idol. Because Rabbi Shmuel, is it? Yeah, I think it's Rabbi Shmuel. He says you can do it. In other words, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's the big two and not the big three. And be perfectly honest, if you look closely at all the different Mefarshim, there are some Rishonim, I forget who, maybe Satosis Rush. I forget who. But there are Rishonim who say, according to some opinions, that it's not only it's the big two, but even there, if it's like Hanosatzma maybe or something like that, you can even do all the big three. That's a very complicated sugya. But one thing is very clear, that according to Shmuel, it's the big two, meaning the only thing is Yehard Val Yavar is Shfichas Domim and Gilarias, not Avodah Zarah, which is not what you would think. Mind you, there's a logic to it. Suppose a guy puts a gun to the head of a Jew and says, bow down to this idol. See, he's doing it, but I mean, he doesn't believe in the God. So, I mean, what is the Isra of Avodah Zarah? You know what I'm saying? Is it to worship another God sincerely? That makes sense, that's an Isra. Is it to worship another God faking it out because somebody put a gun to your head? What's the Isra? I understand. In the end, Rabbi Yochanan says you pass against the big three and not the big two. But it wasn't so clear in the time of Purim. This is something rather new. They had the statue, the Tzelem of Nebuchadnezzar's story. That is true. And even there, it's not Pasha because it says the whole Jewish people bowed down, meaning the Sanhedrin, everybody, just not Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. I know they were Zocha to a miracle. I get it with the fiery furnace. But, you know, as we would say today, significant rabbinic opinion, many poskim, in fact, all the poskim, said you could bow down to that idol. So obviously they held like Rishamal. And now we're a little bit later in time of Achashverosh. And he doesn't tell the Jews to bow down to an idol. He just said he bowed down to Haman. Haman may declare himself an idol or something like that. Or maybe he's wearing one. But anybody bows down to him is doing it Meira, as the Gemara says itself. So all I'm trying to say is it's not simple that you should stir up an Adolf Hitler to go and kill all the Jews just because you hold, you know what I mean, your way. And Mordechai did it, of course, and had a happy ending, but it was a close call. And when I say a happy ending, I mean, the Jews had to fight. Purim, as we said the other day, is commemorating the fights. And we do it on the day after the fights, you know, on the day that they party, but that's how we commemorate it for some reason. But by the way, again, the Chassam Sofer has, did I say this before? I don't think so. The Chassam Sofer has a very yeshivish reason why they commemorate the 14th and not the 13th. Because he says, if you do the 14th, then you're mechalik between the walled cities and the non-walled cities. The walled cities will do it on the 15th, and the non-walled cities will do it on the 14th. On the other hand, if you do it on the 13th, everybody was fighting on the 13th, no difference. And therefore, there would be one day of Purim for everybody. What's the difference? The Chassam Sofer says that on Purim, you have a din ad lo yada. If you're that drunk, you can't learn. I told you, it's very yeshivish. You can't learn. If you can't learn, imagine the whole Klal Yisrael in being mekayim the mitzvah of Purim is not learning. If there was no place in the world that people weren't learning, the world would cease to exist. On the other hand, if you split it up into the days that they rested, then you say some are in the walled cities and some are in the unwalled cities. So the people in the unwalled cities are partying on the 14th, but the people in the walled cities are learning. And vice versa, when you get the Shush and Purim, the people in the walled cities are partying, but the people in the unwalled cities aren't, and they're learning. So you have somebody learning every minute. You know, now it's a big thing now in our time that they have special Siddurim, don't they? I'm sure where you live, special programs for learning. You know, especially the kids, some were important morning or this, that, and the other. What do they call it? Yeshivas Mordechai Tzadik, I think. Isn't that right? But it's the idea, you know, it's very yeshivish. So we end up in a situation where Mordechai kind of took the law into his own hands, which means that people are angry at him because who said he was right? I'll tell you what I mean. You may respond to me, well, look, he was proved right by the victory in the end. Yeah, but we have the story of the Tanna Shel Lachnoi, where Eliezer says, if I'm right, the wall should cave in and the storm should come, all those things. And it happened. So in other words, he also did miracles. And yet, in spite of the miracles, they called him a Zaka Mamre. You know, they excommunicated him. So, if they excommunicate him, in other words, they held like this. Lo b'shamayim hi, achram l'hatos, you got to pass him the way we do. Well, that's the same thing as Mordechai, as far as I can see. And that's why I think Pirshim Menem Mixa Sanhedrin can mean there are plenty of people who held he was wrong. The fact he saved Klal Yisrael, I get that. But I hear the other way also. But you didn't follow the Rov. So the Purim story ends up being very complicated, and I think that's probably why, if you hold that Mahalach, that they were reluctant to add Purim as a holiday. That happened in the end, but they were reluctant to Purim a holiday, because you're celebrating somebody who went against the Rov, right? You're celebrating somebody who went against the Sanhedrin, as best as we can tell. So it's a complicated story to Purim. But again, remember, and they were dealing with a guy who had been a commander of the Persian army. So yes, he was from Hasher Haglam Yishalayim. And yes, he was on Sanhedrin. That's true. And yes, he wasn't your typical type of guy. A person who's high up in the Persian government, a person who's a macher and is commander of army, which is like Shmuel HaNogid or something like that, he wasn't your typical member of Sanhedrin. And they must have related to him in a kind of uncomfortable way. Yes, he's Mordechai, he's a gadol and all the rest of it, but they weren't 100%, you know, comfortable with his mahalach. Although in the end, as you know, he won out, and to the degree, they even got the holiday. Well, I don't know about that, because the Gemara says Esther is the one who pushed it through. I mean, why is Esther going to the Chacham and say, Kisruni l'doros, Kisruni l'doros? Why isn't Mordechai doing the talking? Maybe because Mordechai realized they don't want to hear from him. You know, they don't want to hear from him. They want to hear the other way. And, second here. Yeah. And, you know, he might have been persona non grata or something like that. Although at the same time, they couldn't punish him. Because if I'm really right, why didn't they do to him what they did to Blazer, to Rabbi Eliezer, who lives in Hyrcanus? But he was too powerful. How do I know that? We have the famous case in the Gemara where they wrote to Todas Ishmami, you remember that, where he did the Gedim Akulis, right? Something like that. That in Rome, he was a big macher, Jewish guy, big macher, and supported Chachamim, rich and powerful, and he had at his Seder, you know, like an exact replica of the Karban Pesach. And they said, Imoli Todas Ato, if you weren't Todas Ishmami, if you weren't big and powerful, we put you in Cherem or something like that. But you see, because he was, they didn't put him in Cherem. So you can't do nothing to Mordechai since he's the prime minister of the whole shebang. But it was an uncomfortable relationship. I think that's what's going on behind the scenes in the Megillah. It's part of the Megillah Esther. Anyway, that's just a thought. As I said before, I hope to work this through better on Sunday. Whoever's in Baltimore can come. My house, we daven mincha at 1:45, and then we have the mesiba and the speech, the Dvar Torah. But the basic outlines are along the lines that I just laid out for you. Anyway, once again, thanks to Gluck Plumbing, and I wish everybody happy Purim.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.